Excision number 11212, reel 12.
Colonel Abby Humphreys, reel 12. What else happened at Shanghai while you were there, Colonel?
Well, the other battalion stationed in the racecourse buildings was the Seaforth Highlanders, a battalion which we sort of got on very well with because we had an affiliation, and it went back to the frontier. And we were honorary members of each other's messes, both the officers and sergeants. And so the affiliation between those two regiments was terrific. And you could just go into their mess, press the button, and they give your name. You had a drink, and you could have your own mess bill. And everything in Shanghai was done by taxis, and you sign. You could even sign for your collection in church. It came on your mess bill. Then they did their turn, of course, in duties. They were standby battalion in reserve, but they did their turn. They'd come up from Hong Kong. And we got on terribly well with them. Charming people. Soldiers liked the jocks very much. Why we were there, one very fine officer died in a squash court of heart attack. 6'6", brilliant gamesman, charming man called Miles Mason. Otherwise, I think we lost one or two soldiers through sickness, perhaps, and things, but otherwise we didn't lose anybody, enemy action. And as I say, they saw these atrocities, and they trained when we were not on perimeter, it was just normal sort of doing our infantry training. And, I mean, that was it. And then we went off to Tsin Sin, and we left our friends.
Do you recall when you went to Tsin Sin? Do you recall the date that you went to Tsin Sin?
Well, I've got an album.
I think you said it was Christmas, around about Christmas 38. Was it as late as that?
Well, it wasn't Christmas. We were there for Christmas. We were there. Well before Christmas. It was more November time. Yeah. So we'd really only been in Shanghai a year, November to November. And, well before Christmas. We went up by river steamers and things. And arrived in Tsin Sin. And that was a cosmopolitan too, in a way, but not quite as much cosmopolitan. There were many more Germans there, German businessmen, and they were very in evidence. There were Germans in Shanghai, and everybody got on really well with the Germans. They didn't sort of, there was no gulf or anything. They were just their country, but the ones in Tsin Sin and in Shanghai all wore the young ones, Hitler Youth, brown swastikas and everything, for embassy occasions. Oh, that's the embassies, you see. I mean, well, consulates really, not embassies. Embassies were all inland, most of them. Peking, they had embassies. But our embassy had gone to Nanking. And
Was the same problem with the Japanese at Tientsin as there had been at Shanghai?
Oh, yes. The Japanese had passed, the war had passed over, but they were prodding and pridding to try and get our trade. It was all a question of trade, as I say. And that was the Japanese be-all and end-all. It wasn't to do anything to us. It was to win China over and in the meantime topple anybody who was stopping the trading and that kind of thing. And we always had an embassy guard at Peking, one company, plus. And we had the majority of the battalion at Tientsin. Well, there, I was given a very interesting job as a young subaltern. I was the North China commander, wonderful old man called Brigadier Hopwood, who was in the Lincolns, and he'd been in the Boer War, and he'd done awfully well as the war with the Japanese. He was there before us, was passing over and everything. And I was sent to the headquarters, and his unofficial ADC, cipher officer, sending all the important ciphers down about movements, Japanese and the lot. Adjutant of a thing called the Tientsin British Municipal Emergency Corps, which had a White Russian platoon and a businessman platoon and a light horse. And it was a sort of cutthroat affair. And I was assistant DAPM, or rather DAPM, which meant going round with it. Probably a sergeant to see the brothels were all right on a Saturday night, and one any night you like, rather like all the officers. And that was a very amusing job, and I lived in the mess, and Robin Johnson was immediately above me, a staff captain. It was a very nice brigade major, the gunners called Delamain, and it was terribly, terribly, terribly international. They like the command of the French troops in the whole of North China used to come and say, "I want to talk to you, Brigadier." And Colonel Delsuc arrived, you know, all in his beautiful uniform and everything, with his other French Confederates. And Sherry was always brought out, and they went to his office, a guard of honour. And, of course, in the summer, in the winter, it was very cold, and it was service dress, and it was a fur cap. And at night, the troops went on guard with overboots, enormous coats, fleece lined. I mean, if anybody, they couldn't really get to the rifles, almost. And we walked about in our ordinary service dress with, and we had our coats as well, because, I mean, the orderly officers had to go and visit guards and things in the middle of the night. And sentries were on duty, and the battalion trained, and they played rugger, and they played a lot of games, and soldiers enjoyed themselves.
Was there any indication now, into 1938, the war was coming near? Were you getting any signals from home that war was inevitable or close?
Well, you heard the news from home, and just as the people at home, after when Chamberlain had done that, well, I mean, if you'd been alive, would you have thought war was inevitable? I don't know. But out there, we didn't really hear so much, so we weren't in so much contact about what was happening in between. We knew that the people were making aircraft frantically, and Churchill had revolted, and Eden had revolted, and people like that. And Hitler was just going on and on and on and on, and he was the maniac to rule the world.
Was there any changes in organisation? I'm thinking in terms of Paul Belisha instituting the change.
Oh, no, yes, that had happened.
Did they reach you in any way?
No, not really. I mean, Paul Belisha become a Minister of War, and Gort had been become CIGS, and dear old Gort, who hadn't got much brain but a wonderful courage, and old devil had been sacked, and Dill took over from Gort, of course, when the Bloom went up as CIGS. And Churchill took over from Chamberlain, as you know.
During 39, were you finding in the mess there was more talk about war, possibilities of war?
Yeah, we weren't always... We weren't warmongers, but we knew there was a possibility, and we knew we got to be very prepared and very well trained. So you didn't always talk about war. Well, I don't think you did when the war did really come. You talked about other things. I mean, if your number was on the bullets, you got it. There it was. That was the sort of feeling in those days. Yeah, unpleasant. Letters to your condolence things.
Were there any other incidents at all which in Tientsin? And where did you go after Tientsin? Did you move anywhere else?
Well, incidents were... The Japanese did try and take over the concession. As they were threatening from the west, and so company was rushed out, barriers were put up, soldiers were lined the roads, ready with their rifles and everything. Nothing happened. Brigadier Sir John Laurie, who had taken over from Brigadier Hopwood, stood them down, and we resumed the normal routine. It was a very social place. Tientsin, masses of international parties, and the young Germans who were businessmen, and they took part in paper chasing, and they were members of the club, and they lived in a sort of enormous sort of place that looked like a castle. They didn't come to the club much, the younger ones. The older ones were being born out there. The international German and Russian and white Russian and well, the white Russians were only a new thing after the revolution. Who had no status anywhere, of course. And they had a Russian embassy at Tientsin with guard dogs, Red Russian. And I remember one party at the Red Russian embassy where the Germans were all there with their... younger ones, not the older ones who've been born and bred there, with their khaki swastikas, jack boots, blue trousers, in fact, to beat Hitler youth. And when they got some vodka in them, they got a bit how Hitler was going to rule the world and all this kind of thing. And, they were drank like the rest of people. And it was vodka at that party, of course, and borscht and things. And then the French had parties, and they came to those. And the Americans had parties, and the Italians had parties.
Did you have ceremonial duties?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have ceremonial duties?
Yes. Ceremonial duties were producing guards of honour for these different races, for these different nationalities. When they came to the headquarters, 100 men at a time with the colour, appropriate officers, and when people like the ambassador visited, Sir Archibald Clark Carr, the GOCNC from Hong Kong visited, and the Colonel Delsuc from the French and Colonel Marston from the four colonels. You see, they couldn't bring it in. Americans and the Conti Sagramoso commander from the Italians. I don't think we ever had to get guard of honor for the Italians.
He wasn't big enough. Did you have any problems between the soldiery and the foreign soldiers that were close to them and around them?
No, not really. They didn't see an awful lot of them because the French were in their part of the town, and the Americans, no, not at all. He gone on well with them.
When did you leave Tientsin?
I left Tientsin about early autumn. Well, I expected to be August.
Where were you going?
The reason being that six subalterns were not going home entirely on leave. They were going home to be trained in different types of courses so that when the battalion moved to its next station, Quetta, where there'd been a nasty earthquake, actually, we would be trained. And as the courses were in England, you didn't go from China to India for your courses. And you got your passage paid. The colonel, very kindly, thought, well, now, if you send him on a course, a fortnight's course or 3 weeks' course, and then give him a month's leave or something, and then another course, he'd come back and he'd had his month or 3 weeks or 2 weeks at home on his own home, and he'd be trained, and we'd all assemble back, and we'd be a fully trained battalion. Of course, a certain number of subalterns had to be left behind. A chap called Charles Darcy Irving took over cipher office and all my duties from me. And when I'd gone with these other six, there were terrible floods in Tientsin. They had to move down to the Bund. By that time, GW had gone, and as CO, and the famous second in command, who now is a full colonel, I mean, proper colonel, you mean brevet, Lysak Griffin, came out to command. And he arrived in the middle of the floods, I think. And Harry Lowe, the wonderful quartermaster who'd been joined in 1902, was the lieutenant, made lieutenant colonel and quartermaster in the mess. That was before GW went. And GW had a high pitched titter. And Harry Lowe, he tittered, and he said, Harry, do I call you sir or do you call me sir? And old Harry was standing on his head then, aged, teetotaler, perhaps had one glass of sherry hard. And he used to put his hands down. He was a great PTist in his time. Went up like that. He hadn't got the Rooty Medal because he hadn't been another rank long enough to get the Rooty Medal.
What's the Rooty Medal?
The Long Service of Good Conduct. He was all through the war as the RSM on the frontier with the 1st Battalion. He was made quartermaster at the end because the 1st Battalion never went. They went in India the whole war. And he'd been RSM quartermaster ever since, worked his way up. Got an OBE for great work in England before they came to China. And they got his brevet. Only five in the whole of the British Army. Two regimental ones and three at the war box. And he was a great, wonderful personality. We had those sort of personalities with the battalion. They were old soldiers and young soldiers and...
So you were going on a course back to England?
Six of us went on a course. And we missed the floods. and they were evacuated, the families, to Shanghai Kwan to get them away from the water. And by that time, poor Peter Luard, the general, colonel of the regiment's son, had died of double pneumonia overnight, and he was going to be adjutant. Colonel Norman, Oscar Norman, took over adjutant instead, and the battalion moved after Christmas to Hong Kong and on to Egypt.
And where, what was happening to you at this time?
Well, I was at home and the war was on, and I was wartime. I was in my wartime job. What happened was, we went down to Hong Kong. We had a blissful 10 days waiting for a boat to arrive. It was right. The funny Dilwar again. It was inevitable then war was coming. Oh, it was inevitable. And we hired a car. You could hire a car there. We lived in the Lapa-Luxury in the Peninsula Hotel. And we were able to go all around Hong Kong. Now, the brigade major, Colonel Reeves, was Brigadier Reeves, brigade major, he was rifle brigade, Brigadier Reeves, was J.H. Brown, who'd been a very brilliant young officer, captain, with us in China. John Down passed in top to the Staff College and passed out top. And he'd become game major at Hong Kong. He'd been in Shanghai, and he'd been... he went down when we went... We didn't... He wasn't up at Tsim. And he arranged different things for us, and so we had a tour to Hong Kong. We went out to Fanling and saw where the frontier was. And in those days, of course, there was a lovely country in between, and the peak and all that kind of thing weren't built up, and there were no high-rise flats or anything. And it was much more rural and quaint.
Was it...
There were a lot of soldiers there. There was the Royal Scots in casement barracks, the Middlesex, and the Gunners, and the... I was going to say Indian regiments, I can't remember, but there were Indian regiments and Indian mule corps and all kinds of things. And one knew a lot of one's contemporaries at Sandhurst with these different regiments. And Repulse Bay was a lovely place. And we spent a little blissful time. And then it was going to be a naval trooper, the whole of the ship's company of the Eagle, which came steaming in, because there was always aircraft carriers and the China fleet. From, actually, Tin Sin, I'd had a wonderful time, because the brigadier had arranged for me to go out to sea right down the coast with a sloop, because we always had five sloops, different sloops, in at Tin Sin. One always there. Yeah, and I went with a commander, Woodhall, who got two DSOs and was sunk beginning first year of the war. Charming chap. And the head captain in charge of the whole flotilla was Enright, and he became a full admiral, charge of dockyards in the war. And right, come the enough people arriving. The day came, the ship's company were being paid off. Captain Oliver Manassas was the head boy on the Dilwar, and it was a naval troop ship. And we had a whole lot of army families and a few army different people, C4th quartermaster, one or two other people going home. And mostly wives, because the other ranks, all the militia, that's the ones that went to train the second line TAs that started when the Fanny War was on, gone across Canada. So we had their wives. And there were six subalterns and all naval and everything like that. And we set sail and bid farewell to Hong Kong, having had a lovely time. And we went very slowly, and we got to first port of call was Colombo, I think. Anyway, no, Singapore, of course. I think Singapore, and then we stayed away there. War leaned even more inevitable. Poor to we had. Then we went to the Barrel Rocks of Aden, and then after that, we rarely thought war was coming at Aden. I mean, war clouds were gathering.
Where were you when war broke out?
Well, I'll tell you. It won't be in a minute. And then we limped through the Suez Canal, and we war clouds were really gathering. And on the morning of the 3rd of September, we arrived at Port Said, and we heard that war had started, and Churchill and Chamberlain said we were now at war with Britain, with Germany.
What were your feelings, Colonel, knowing that the war had started? What were your, recall?
Well, I wanted to get to the war. But my feelings was to get back and fight with the battalion I'd been with. So we all filed up, said, can we get back? Because the Daneira came out with people from China, reinforcements. And they said, not on your life. You've got to go on. So on we stayed at the boat. And we stayed there for at least 8 days for a convoy to amass. And there was an old admiral in his private yacht called Goldsmith who was brought off. And there were students from Oxford and archaeologists and there were all kinds of people came on, including one or two German prisoners of war. And
where did they come from?
They were taken immediately war was declared, hovering around Port Said under escort. And by the time about the fifth day come, we weren't allowed off the boat. The convoy amassed. Six destroyers, I think it was, a cruiser. 17 merchant ships, and the Dilwara's the flagship, admiral on board. And we set sail in the middle of the night from Port Said to go to Gibraltar. And by that time, of course, there was submarines threats all over the place, so we had special precautions. And we were used to, in the middle of the night, do turns and practice turns. And a lovely moonlight night, I remember. Well, I'd just been down, we'd been playing some game in the lounge and gone to bed. And there's an awful crash. And the emergency turns hadn't worked, which were one red for a turn to starboard, and, or two reds for a pistol and certain hooters, and green for port. And a little Scottish merchantman had gone into the Dilwara, luckily right at the tip, and it was a pointed bow, so it had hand hold the ship, but it lurched right over. We screaming women and children, wonderful petty officers attached to us to help us up with them. Order, stand to the boats. And then when it was inspected, it was found that it wasn't going on, and the language from the bridge of the old admiral and the language to the Glaswegian captain of this little blue funnel line or whatever it was heard to be believed, had to be believed. You heard this going on, and then there was an awful grating, and the ship righted itself, and the little one with the dent in its front. No one was hurt at all, luckily. And we went on, limped into Gibraltar, where we were at least, another week for a court of inquiry and everything. And by that time, that convoy had gone on, and the admiral had to stay behind in the Dilwara, of course, because he'd been held. And so the little man who held us and witnesses, and we stayed with the Somerset Light Infantry. We went across to Spain and Algeciras, and we played polo and we enjoyed ourselves. There was nothing else to do. The war was on, and we looked, subs. We heard that subs were very near and all this kind of thing. We saw the apes, then when the court of inquiry was over, we sailed on and we got to England in 7th October, I think.